This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. The ASEAN fintech space is piping hot right now. According to recent surveys, fintech investments in the region tripled this year to a record $3.5 billion so far amid pandemic-driven digitalization trends. As its name suggests, ASEAN Fintech Group is hoping to snag a slice of this lucrative pie. AFG is part of Fatfish Internet Group, which itself is listed on the ASX. How does AFG plan to make its mark in a space that's packed with contenders? We find out from Douglas Gunn, Executive Director at ASEAN Fintech Group, who joins me on the show this morning. Douglas, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thanks, Susanna.
I want to start with understanding what ASEAN Fintech Group is. So AFG has described itself as a next-generation venture corporation aimed at building an impactful ASEAN fintech value chain. What does that mean?
So we believe that in the past few years, you have seen singular fintech companies like payment gateways, e-wallets, insurtech, lending, crowdfunding, so and so forth. So all these are singular verticals that a lot of startups have tried their hand in the last at least 7 years. We believe that the time is right, especially this year, where post-COVID, a lot of people believe that they want everything in one. They don't really want to go to so many different places to consume their services, although that will probably still be true for the next 1 year or so. But eventually, they would want to have everything in one. And they would want, for example, in a fintech environment, when you want to buy your first insurance, or when you want to take your first loan, or when you want to make your first investment, all this requires KYC, right? Which is knowing your customer. So they have to submit all their information over and over again. But at AFG, as long as they're an AFG customer, we can cross-reference those data sets, enabling the merchant, who's our main customer, to enjoy cross services from investments to loans, their point of sale system, to their payment gateway, into their insurance.
I see. So essentially, AFG is looking to become a one-stop center for all these financial services for your partners or merchants that work with you.
Yeah, that's right.
How much control does AFG have over company operations that it invests in or that it acquires?
We have at least 51% in those companies. In some cases, we have up to 100%, especially when we are helping one of our local brands from Malaysia to expand out to, say, Thailand or Indonesia. Those expansion usually means that the management team in Malaysia is capable of running another jurisdiction, and that our technology stack is mature enough to replace the existing tech stack of the acquiree. And then that will enable us to say, okay, we want 100% shareholding in that entity because our guys can run it.
So you're quite involved in the companies that you invest in and acquire. Now, AFG tends to go on a mergers and acquisition drive over the next year, armed with around $20 million in funds to invest in startups. In which fintech areas do you see the most promise out of the four verticals that AFG operates in? So you mentioned those earlier. They were insurtech, payments, lending, digital wealth management. Which areas are you going to be focusing on?
Yeah, so right now, our payment gateway business, we're doing around $2.5 million per day. So we intend for that to continue growing. We have recently successfully signed off with a Singapore payment gateway. So that will add a few more millions in volume. Then we intend to expand that to Philippines as well. Then for our digital wealth business, that is fairly new. So far in Singapore, we are generating about average of 12% return to our customers. So we intend for that to expand to Malaysia, Indonesia, as well as Thailand. And then for our point of sale business, which is the omni-channel experience of a merchant, where they can work with us offline, online, their food delivery, their takeaway, their menu, their website, basically an omni-channel experience for the merchant and the consumer. That right now is only in Singapore, but we intend to expand that to Malaysia and Philippines. And for lending, there's a buy now, pay later business that's very, very, very lucrative and growing very fast. Yeah, so that one, we currently have it in Malaysia and we're expanding to Singapore and Indonesia. Yeah, then for insurance, Fedberry, as you would have known in Malaysia, has acquired a Thailand insurance broker. And right now, they are in the process of acquiring a Singapore and an Indonesian insurance broker as well.
So those are what you're already working on. But are there any new acquisitions or new mergers that you're looking at? Do you already have targets in mind and who you intend to partner up with or who you intend to invest in for the coming year?
Yes. So more payment gateways, more lending companies, more insurance companies in preferably other markets that we are not in yet. So like maybe more Philippines startups, maybe more Vietnamese startups, Cambodian, Myanmar. So basically in the ASEAN region, right now we are in 4 countries. So we're looking at growing into 2 to 3 more countries next year. So for sure, we will enter Philippines next year. So we'll be at 5 countries. Then the additional country, whether is it Vietnam, Cambodia or Myanmar, will depend on the opportunities available to us.
As you mentioned, you're present in 4 out of 10 ASEAN countries. And you gave an overview of the kinds of services that you offer in each country. So not every country has all of the services that you offer. How do you decide what to delve into? What's your deciding factor in where you choose to launch a service?
Actually, right now, we can't really choose where to launch because when we invest or when we acquire the startup, they would be based at wherever they are. So what we can do, though, we are 160 people right now in the whole group across 4 countries, which is still relatively small for so many business verticals. So what we're trying to do now is to synergize the businesses. Like, for example, earlier I explained that in Singapore, we have a point of sale business that is, doing an omni-channel presence for the merchant and the consumer. So we would like to take that to Malaysia because right now we already have a payment gateway that has thousands of merchants on the platform. So then the question is, how can we put these two together so that, they will have an immediate base of at least a couple of hundred merchants launched in Malaysia. So it has been pretty promising. So right now, the business from Singapore that's expanding to Malaysia already have 54 merchants. So that's a pretty good number. And we see that growing very quickly because of our strong presence in Malaysia. And then say, for example, our insurance business that's in Malaysia and doing so well, we are acquiring the Singapore insurance broker and the Indonesian insurance broker that will enable us to expand with the insurer because in this case, the insurance market has only that many insurers. So we are a little bit lucky there. Mm. So we can work together very closely with the insurers and expand them across the markets that we are in. Yeah.
Okay. It's a sort of more organic in a way you're looking for opportunities based on what you have rather than focusing on a particular country and seeing and kind of aiming to grow there. I want to talk about the suite of fintech services that you launched in October this year. So AFG was set up in 2017, but I think many of your services came into official operation in October. Wouldn't you say that you're a bit late to the party, given that we're now in the recovery phase and the sweet spot to introduce services like buy now, pay later or e-payments that would have been a year ago, during the height of the pandemic of sorts. So aren't you a bit late?
So we would like to let's talk about the buy now, pay later business, right? So we only launched that in October, which is obviously very late. But from the launch till now, we have been experiencing a 400% growth every single week. But that can only happen because we have an existing payment gateway. And that payment gateway has a couple of thousand merchants on the platform. So it's an immediate acceleration. Actually, we tried to acquire a Malaysian buy now, pay later business. In fact, we approached all the players in the Malaysian market. We tried to acquire one. And the bulk of them, their volume a year is not even our volume in a month in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, So before we were trying to acquire, they were like, okay, asking for very sky high valuations. And we're like, maybe we should just try to launch it since we already have a payment gateway, better pay, right? And then the next thing is that At the insurance side, we also have a lot of merchants buying their motor and car insurance with us at Fredberry, right? So we thought, okay, why not let's try to approach these merchants as well and say, okay, we would like to offer our buy now pay later services to you. And they were very receptive. That's why we grew so fast. Mm-hmm. So I think, like you said, right, our objective is to grow organically so that we can drive sales and meaningful value to our ecosystem, not just, you know, a typical startup trying to fundraise and then after that, you know, you don't know where they are. But for us, we're just trying to make sure that there's accretive value each time. Yeah, so the buy now pay later business, I think, has proven that it's not too late because we have immediate access to a couple of hundred merchants in less than 2 months.
Okay, all right. So at the start, it looks pretty promising. But how much growth is there in BNPL actually? Because if we look at places like Australia, where BNPL has a firm footing, I mean, the trends there show that demand for BNPL isn't as strong as expected. And given that there's a lot of competition, profits are actually the exception. I'm not sure that there are any BNPL players making profits at the moment. So what makes you think that things would be different in Malaysia?
Yeah, that's why it is important to make sure that when you're introducing a business, it is part of an ecosystem. So we think that BNPL is a feature. It's a feature for the merchants. For example, if the merchant is already on our payment gateway services, it is easy for them to say, I would like to also use your omni-channel marketing services. I also like to use your omni-channel retail online retail services, food delivery business services, so on and so forth. So for them to say, I would like to add a buy now, pay later feature, it's easy. You know? So for us, we never look at any of our fintech businesses as a single vertical. We look at them as complementary. So essentially for AFG, we only have two clientele, the consumers and the merchants. So as long as we provide value to the merchants and every accretive value to the merchant means something to their business, drives efficiency, lowers their costs, increase their sales, that is what we're looking at and that's what we are focusing on.
I'm speaking to Douglas Gunn, Executive Director of ASEAN Fintech Group. When we come back, more on the businesses that AFG operates in and where else do they plan to go next. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and on the show with me today is Douglas Gunn, Executive Director of ASEAN Fintech Group, a fintech venture corporation. Now, earlier on in the show, we were talking about the buy now, pay later trend and AFG's forays into this space with the introduction of its service, Pay Slow Slow. I'm wondering about how concerned you are about regulatory oversight on BNPL, because we know that Bank Negara is looking to enact a Consumer Credit Act next year to regulate BNPL services, among others. So do you see this having an impact on your growth targets?
No, actually, we welcome the Act and we hope that they can implement it in conjunction with their CTOS and in conjunction with their credit rating capabilities that will enable us as a buy now pay later provider to provide better and more responsible credit lending to our consumers, as well as facilitating the merchant's sales.
Okay, so you're in total support of regulatory oversight. You're looking forward to seeing these regulations in place.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, without these regulations in place, we would actually be quite worried about the social impact that buy now, pay later businesses have. Because, you know, on our end, when we work with the merchants, in our system, we actually flag out. So if a consumer, they goes on an overdrive shopping spree, you know, and they want to buy a lot of stuff, we will engage them and we'll try and figure out, okay, you know, is this like a, because it's Christmas or is this because, you know, you're just, you know, buying a lot for yourself. Then if they're buying a lot for themselves, usually we try to limit their purchases. So we make sure that the consumer is not over exposed in credit.
Interesting. So you actually have these safety mechanisms to sort of ensure that consumers don't overspend, they're beyond their limits or get trapped into a debt trap, for example, just because of the high household debts. I'm wondering how do you plan to do that? Is this automated or do you have human resources behind this monitoring? What is that like?
It's automated. So the system actually checks that the same person is trying to, you know, purchase too many things, but based on their credit profile, maybe based on their payslip, it seems a little bit over, then we will you know, stop them from being able to over purchase. But because the act is not so clear, whether we are able to combine so many data sets, I feel that it will be more meaningful if the government can say, okay, you know what, all the buy now pay later players, you must send us all the say consumer spending. Of course, you know, they can anonymize it, but you know, their spending patterns, and then we will run it through certain credit checks to make sure that this person is not overexposed.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's a suggestion there for the regulators. You mentioned some pretty positive trends in BNPL for your company earlier on. What are your growth targets when it comes to BNPL? How much market share are you aiming to gather, say, by the next year?
Great. So, again, we don't look at BNPL as a singular vertical. So we look at it as the merchants being able to increase their sales because now they can allow their consumers to pay across a couple of installments. So for Pay Slow Slow, the focus is really on helping and making sure that the merchant business can grow and they can connect better to their consumers. So next year, we would like to introduce a CRM, loyalty-related SaaS elements for the merchants so that they can engage their customers meaningfully. And we hope to combine that as well together with our point of sale system, with our omni-channel sales system so that we can enable the merchant, not just purely on buy now, pay later, running tons of promotions and you know, I think that's detrimental to the business growth.
Okay, all right. So it's a more holistic kind of look at growing it, not just based on any one particular indicator.
That's right.
I want to talk about your InsurTech platform, which you mentioned earlier, Fatberry. At the moment, it's mainly focused on car insurance. I'm wondering why car insurance, which tends to have lower margins? You know, are you looking to expand into medical given the focus on health at the moment? How are you planning to grow this platform?
Yeah, so at the moment, Fatberry offers car, motor, and COVID-19 insurance. We definitely would like to expand that to, you know, personal accident, travel as travel starts opening up, and you know, life-related insurance eventually. But we think that it will take time. And why we do car and motor in Malaysia is because almost everyone drives a car and all have a motorcycle. So we think that's like the perfect way to penetrate the market and get to as many consumers as we can in the shortest period of time possible.
Hmm. I guess the promise of InsurTech also is about tapping into the uninsured market. And how are you doing that? You know, what do you think are the challenges in reaching or in reaching out to these people who need insurance? Is it down to digital penetration? Is it just awareness of your brand?
I think the beautiful part about Malaysia being such a big country as compared to, you know, tiny Singapore, which is just a red dot, is that Malaysia has a lot of private hospitals and a lot of clinics, you know, and a lot of the time, a lot of this healthcare related activities is about convenience. So if the consumer feel that it is very convenient for them to have access to health, to clinics, dental, hospitals, and you know, it could be near them or a couple of kilometers from them, then it will allow the consumer to feel, okay, you know, I should get my insurance. As compared to, you know, like you said, right, there's many uninsured. Maybe they just find it very inconvenient.
Okay.
At this time, yeah.
So it's the convenience of it, the availability of it, just the widespread, I guess, choice. That's what will make people more open to getting insured.
Yes, as well. As well as the, you know, packages, right? So we think something along the line of a subscription model would maybe easier to understand to the consumer.
Right now, Fatberry is present in Malaysia. And as you mentioned earlier, you're also expanding into the Thai insurance market. What made you decide to enter into the Thai insurance market through Bumu?
Yeah. So before every M&A, mergers and acquisition that we do for every company, we look at the founding team. And Mumu's founding team, they're very passionate. So it's a family sort of business where the parents started it almost 15 years ago, almost two decades, you know, and then the kids took over in the last 5 to 7 years, you know, and then they have been digitizing it and trying to get it online. But of course, they're facing some difficulties with the technology platform. So when we came in, we found a perfect match for both of us where we can provide the technical services. And most of our engineers are in KL. So we can provide the technical services to them. We can introduce them our platform. And then rebrand them a little bit to become more digital. So introducing Fatberry Thailand with a very strong team and very dedicated and passionate about the market is very important. Yeah, so all their customers that has been with them has been with them for over 10 years. So that shows the credibility and the loyalty of their customer base, you know. And because it's generational also, so it's between their parents' generation as well as the kids' generation, we find this kind of company to be very meaningful.
Okay, so those are the kinds of startups that you're particularly interested to invest in, those that have deep ties into the community, that bring with them some form of network rather than maybe startups that come out of nowhere. Is that right?
Definitely, definitely. Yes, yes, yes. And I think we are lucky that in the last 7 years, there has been many fintech startups, and AFG can ride on that advantage to find the right people, people who are passionate about that particular area of focus. Because as shared, AFG is not just focusing on a singular vertical. We're really looking at making sure the merchant has accretive value. We're looking to make sure that the consumer has accretive value when they are engaged with AFG.
Okay. Taking a broad look at the whole fintech space, at the moment, it's not just the disruptors in this space anymore. Traditional banks are also pivoting into digital finance, and they bring their heft and networks with them. I'm wondering what will happen to outfits like yours, like AFG, when the big banks start to take on fintech services. Are you poised to cope with that kind of competition?
So at the moment, we feel that the passionate entrepreneurs enhancing the value of the merchant in that value chain will enable us to have a position of strength as compared to, you know, if we were to be in a singular vertical. So if we're in a singular vertical, the risk is significantly higher. Because the banks could potentially offer a holistic experience for the merchant. But thankfully, you know, the banks are currently our main partners for our payment gateway business, and we would like to expand that relationship. Also, thankfully, that, you know, for banks, they are also very collaborative. So I think we have not seen a bank so far in our partnerships in the past few years where they say we want to do everything on our own and we don't want to collaborate with anybody. So typically, the bank that we have been partnering with says we like to collaborate. We understand that, you know, technology is always moving forward. So we would like to, give the best kind of technology platform, technological innovation, new technological ideas to our customers. And we would like to leverage. Yeah, so that's what we've been doing together with the banks. So rather than competing, we've been partnering. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's your strategy there. What are your long-term goals? I mean, you know, at the moment, is listing the ultimate end goal for the companies under your stable? Does AFG itself plan to list? What are your thoughts there?
All of us have heard how hot the spec space has been in the last 1 year. And I believe it would continue in the next 18 months. And I think that could be a potential route for AFG. But of course, having said that, we are always open to any other forms of financing to continue to grow the business. We don't see any IPO or any SPAC as a potential exit, but more for a continuation of the business and the ability to get more parties involved. Yeah. So like I said, you know, we have many banking partners. When we do an IPO or a SPAC and they became one of our shareholders, it will enable us to offer a more integrated service with them.
At this point, is AFG making profit, or and do you have a timeline for profitability at the moment?
Oh, so this year we have been spending too much. We spent about almost 10 mil acquiring, merging and synergizing the startups. But in our monthly run rate, we are very close to profitability. Yeah, so I would say for the business operations in general, they are generally profitable or very close to profitability. Even for the startups that we are merging with or acquiring, they are also generally very close to profitability or already profitable.
Very close. Do you have like a kind of target deadline when you expect to see, you know, yourself in the black?
As a fintech startup, we hope to be able to grow and capture the market as much as we can. So if, you know, 3 or 4 more startups next year in different markets gives us a very good headwind, a big start in the country, then we don't mind continue to you know lose some money, but assuming it's at status quo, our current business units will be profitable by next year.
All right, Douglas, thank you very much for speaking with me, and I look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sujana.
I've been speaking to Douglas Gunn, Executive Director of ASEAN FinTech Group. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.